You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Julie Powell's Julie and Julia, my year of cooking dangerously, was made into a hit movie this year starring Meryl Streep and Amy Adams. The book, which was almost as much about her husband Eric as it was about her obsession with cooking every recipe and mastering the art of French cooking, was cited as an example of an almost perfect urban marriage. Julie returns to our show today to talk about what happened to that perfect marriage after her year of cooking dangerously. She calls her new book Cleaving, A Story of Marriage, Meat, and Obsession. It's published by Little Brown. I'm very pleased it has brought Julie Powell back to our show. Hi.
Hi. Glad to be here.
I understand the marriage and meat part. What was the obsession?
Well, there are several involved in the book, but the main obsession that refers to is an obsession with a man that I had a two-year affair with that was quite messy, the resulting chaos in my marriage.
And that came right after the book was published?
Soon after the book. Actually, before the book was actually published, after the period of the blog.
Were you feeling like you were in an uneasy place at that time?
Yeah, I mean, I think the effects of Julie and Julia, the project, and then more importantly, the book deal, ability to quit my job as a government worker, and I was working as a writer. I was being hired. And I had a whole new life, and it did. It had ramifications that I hadn't expected. More just in terms of sort of throwing into a new light a marriage that had not grown, whereas both of its participants had. And we'd been together since we were 18.
Because people often ask, I know they're asking now when they look at pictures of Tiger Woods' wife, why did he have to go?
Sure.
And spoil it all. Well, you know, sure. Julie. And Julia presents such a sweet portrait of a marriage. You're a best-selling author. It does sound perfect.
And it was. And I think, you know, nothing that's in Julie and Julia, the book certainly, and even the movie, even though the movie is obviously a sweetened rom-com version, is inauthentic. And everything that Eric was in Julie and Julia is absolutely true. I think that Cleaving is in part about how even the strongest marriage can crumble when it isn't changing with the two participants. So I wouldn't say that infidelity is a great way to solve marital problems, but it did bring to light ways that we needed to look again at our relationship.
And this man you call D throughout the book, mm-hmm. Is he very different from your husband, Eric?
In almost every way, yes. Yes.
Did you try to be discreet?
You know, I did. I tried. but it was an inherently self-destructive act. And you know, participating in this affair, there was some part of me that wanted to be found out, I think.
How long before Eric did find out?
Not terribly long. It was a couple of months before he discovered things.
And how did he react?
You know, he was extraordinarily upset, and I was extraordinarily upset. And we did everything you would think. We cried and fought and sobbed and tried to try and figure things out. But we never walked away from one another.
You didn't think of getting divorced?
Well, we talked. You know, we talked about it. We tortured ourselves over it. But it just, I don't know. I think something between us never broke. You know, if one of or the other of us had stopped feeling the same way that we felt, then we would have walked away.
But often what happens is when you hit that kind of crisis, mm-hmm. you have to make a decision. You mm-hmm. give up the affair or mm-hmm. you end the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
not what happened here.
No, I handled things very messily. I spent a long period of time when I couldn't make that choice and didn't make that choice. And that was difficult for me, incredibly difficult for Eric, and in some ways very selfish on my part. But I think that it was also, I mean, in a weird way, D came around at the sort of exact right/wrong time and put this wedge into the marriage that probably would have not been torn asunder in the same way, but which ultimately needed to be torn asunder so that we could figure out how to put it back together again.
Well, the biggest crises in Julie and Julia is whether you can get the recipe cooked correctly. I'm assuming Clipping was a much more difficult book to write.
Well, yes. I mean, absolutely. It's, you know, it's a much darker, more personal book. But it's also, you know, like the butchering that I do in the book, it was the writing as well was a sort of cathartic experience, and it was my way of sorting through what happened here. You know, and as I was writing the book, I was still reeling from the events, and Eric and I were still trying to figure out what we were going to do. So it was very, very difficult, but it was also necessary.
But you don't present yourself in a flattering way in this book.
Not particularly, no.
Now, okay, so let's talk about the butchering.
Yes.
Along with this affair, and people will have to read the book to find out what happened, you got interested in butchering. Mm-hmm. Now, why?
Well, you know, I've been fascinated by butchers for a really long time, ever since I moved to New York, because I grew up in a suburban Texas town, and I got all our meat came from a supermarket wrapped in cellophane.
But that's where the cows are, aren't they, in Texas?
They are, and yet they're off on feedlots very, very far away, and they come, you know, all that meat. You've talked to people about the industrial farming situation, and they're chopped up by the tens of thousands in these enormous slaughterhouses, and they come to your grocery store all wrapped up and pretty clean.
In fact, they take them from Texas and they send them to Iowa.
They do.
Where they are then put into some kind of a vacuum pack and then sent back to Texas.
Exactly. Lovely, isn't it? It's a great system. But anyway, so I came to New York and I became fascinated with this old world New York butcher shops and the smells and the sights, and especially these men who had spent decades and decades of their lives doing this work until they had this sureness that I just envied.
And you're right, the butcher is more certain about meat than I've ever been about anything in my life. So you were looking for something that you could be genuinely passionate about?
Absolutely. And also, I mean, I'm the kind of person, for better or for worse, who in times of crisis tends to need a structure and something, you know, very daunting to focus on. And butchering fills that bill beautifully. It takes so much physical and mental focus to learn the craft and I just needed that. I needed it as a haven.
Was this happening simultaneously with the other crisis in your life?
I began the butchery, I think, I began the butchery just a few months before Dee and I broke up finally, or he broke up with me. But it was sort of in the midst of the crisis that I
ran. And how did Eric respond to this new obsession with cutting meat?
He was a little clueless, but not clueless, but baffled, I should say. I think it was preferable to the other things I'd been obsessing about. So, and I brought home lots of pork chops, and he understood that. But physical separation, because I was going up to Kingston, New York, three or four times a week, staying up there overnight, and that which was a sort of physical separation that I needed, but was troubling to him, I think.
Now, you went to Kingston because that's where a butcher shop would accept you as an apprentice?
Yeah.
Is it hard? You just can't walk into a butcher shop and say, I'd like to learn how to cut meat.
No, your average, old school butcher is not thrilled with the notion of letting some clueless chick with a sharp knife behind his counter. It took me a while to find somebody willing to take me on. Luckily, Josh and Jessica Applestone at Fleischer's in Kingston are crazy people in the best way, and said, sure, come on back and let me be there at their table with them.
Well, meat is expensive, and you can't just give somebody a knife and say, start cutting, because you could, forgive the pun, you could really butcher it.
Exactly. And so they started me off from the cheap, easy cuts, and we moved carefully on. He was, but Josh is an extraordinary guy and not a particularly practical one. He's getting more practical nowadays. He charges for his apprenticeships, which I think is a good thing. I got it for free. But you see, he's a real generous guy and was really patient with me.
And what kinds of tools do you use as a butcher?
Well, you know, 85%, I would say, of butchery takes place, you know, you use the inch end of a slender five-inch boning knife. It's a much more delicate art than you would think it is. You know, the cleaver that you think of as very rarely used, actually. You know, there's a bandsaw. You use that.
Well, you're using that just to separate pieces of meat that have already been butchered.
Well, but even the great big, I mean, yes, but you can break down an entire lamb, for instance, with nothing more than this one little boning knife. The beef, of course, comes in primals, and those are more difficult.
Well, but we're talking about a very sharp knife. Is it dangerous? Did you ever hurt yourself?
Oh, sure. Nothing too serious. Little cuts and nicks and scratches from the feather bones and stuff like that. Josh has some stories. Nowadays, everyone in his shop has to wear a chainmail apron because a few months ago, about maybe a year ago now, he stabbed himself in the rib.
Oh.
And you, yeah.
He didn't have any spare ribs.
But I'm bummed. Now everyone does protect themselves a little better than when I was there.
And what did you hope to gain from this apprenticeship? You didn't want to become a butcher.
Oh, no, I don't think that I ever aspired to you know. Well, sometimes when
you had
in
a best-selling book at this time.
I did, but I needed. I mean, there's something about a writer's life that you know, you sit in front of a laptop, you know, doodle around on the internet. It's you know, my brain was like a habit, hamster on a wheel. Butchering became a meditative thing for me, and it was a real way to focus and sort of let my mind wander for a bit.
And you didn't just wander up to Kingston. You wandered to Argentina, to Ukraine, to Tanzania.
Yes.
Why? You want to see as many different abattoirs as you could?
Well, that was part of it. You know, I called my time at Fleischer's an apprenticeship, but it was just as much an incubation period. It was my period of sort of finding my own two feet after being in a marriage that was, for all of its wonderful qualities, so enmeshed and entwined that I'd never really been an independent adult. And so after that, I really wanted to, A, see how my skills translated in other cultures and other countries, and just be alone in the world. I'd never been to a foreign country by myself. I'd never experienced exotic, strange places without the lens of my husband's perception. So I wanted to sort of see things purely from my own, with my own eyes. That's really as much what the travel was about as the butchering.
And did Eric understand why you had to travel alone, or was he suspicious?
No. Eric is an extraordinarily courageous and generous guy. He wasn't thrilled. You know, he missed me and all that. But I think he really did get me.
And so it helped you work out your problems with the marriage.
Absolutely did. I think, you know, I came back from the butchering and from the travels with a better sense of myself and a better sense of, and that can only be a good thing. And, you know, that the realization that pulling away a little bit is actually good, you know, that there are two people in a marriage.
Well, I have heard that if you cut meat correctly, mm-hmm. it tastes better. The same piece of meat, mm-hmm. if somebody really knows how to butcher it, mm-hmm. It's going to taste better when it's finally cooked.
Well, I think,
are you buying carcasses these days?
I don't buy. It's hard to butcher a whole carcass in a New York apartment. But I do. You know, so mostly I go up to Fleischer's and butcher what they have and then buy it. But you know, I think there's no question that, you know, a hacked up tenderloin is going to be not. It needs to be done well.
Has Michael Pollan called and asked you to give lessons?
I don't think Michael Pollan needs lessons from me. He needs to call Josh.
Julie Powell's latest book. We're not going to go into all of the details of the rest of the personal story, but that's why they sell these books. It's called Cleaving, A Story of Marriage, Meat, and Obsession, and it is published by Little Brown. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks for having me.